Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. They come in maturities from 1 month all the way out to 30 years. Yes, I speak here of the Treasury bond market, also known as your economic future. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday, today, the 20th of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, it's not often we take you deep into the underbelly of the American bond market, but today is your lucky day. The federal government kicked off a big couple of 3 days in the Treasury market this morning. It sold almost $180 billion worth of short-term bonds. In all, it's going to be just over a $250 billion in new government debt by the time this Thursday has come and gone. I'm telling you that because it's $4 billion more than the government raised in the same offering last month, and it is why we are starting here today. Marketplace's Amy Scott gets us going.
It's no surprise that the Treasury is borrowing more money.
What we're seeing is a big increase in the financing needs of the federal government.
Kathy Jones is a fixed income strategist at Charles Schwab. The company is one of our underwriters. She says the Federal Reserve is no longer buying as many bonds, so the market has to absorb more of that debt. Also, the recent budget deal added $300 billion to the deficit.
And then we've had tax cuts and the likelihood of higher budget deficits going forward. So we'll need to attract buyers to the market.
The way to attract buyers is to pay a higher yield or interest rate on those bonds. In today's auctions, 3-month and 6-month bills sold at the highest yields in almost a decade. Meanwhile, the Fed is expected to act to counter rising inflation. Marilyn Cohen manages bond portfolios as president of Envision Capital Management.
Add up and subtract all those variables in the equation, and we are seeing finally higher interest rates, which I, for one, am happy about.
Aaron Coley is an interest rate strategist at BMO Capital Markets. He says whether higher rates are good for you depends on your situation.
If you're, you know, a snowbird who has a big pile of savings that he's looking for retirement, you can earn more on your savings. But if you're someone who's young who's looking to buy that first house, this may not be the best news.
For the federal government, more borrowing at higher costs drives up deficits even more, which can be a long-term drag on the economy. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
About that tax law, then, the proximate cause of all that extra borrowing that Amy was just talking about, there is some new polling out showing Americans see that law more favorably than they did even a month or two ago, perhaps because there is a little more money in their paychecks. In official Washington, though, they are still fighting about the law, specifically how to interpret the thing the Internal Revenue Service, the Treasury Department, and the White House Office of Management and Budget are at odds. Marketplace's Ryan Kailath talked to former officials from each.
Here's the gist. Every federal agency that wants a new regulation has to send it to the Office of Management and Budget for review. Except for the IRS, says former OMB Administrator Susan Dudley. The IRS doesn't have to submit mundane rules that merely interpret the tax code, like,
how do you calculate days? Is it calendar days? Is it business days? That sort of thing.
Juicy stuff. The problem is, over time,
that exemption has been used much more broadly than that. To achieve policy goals rather than simply clarifying what's in the tax code.
For example, rules about nutrition labeling, corporate inversions, birth control provisions in the Affordable Care Act. Dudley says the IRS got to sneak all those past the review process, claiming they're just interpretations of the tax code.
It makes the regulations less transparent, less accountable.
What are they worried about? Do they think that, like, somebody is breaking the law?
Adam Looney, formerly of Treasury's Office of Tax Analysis.
I guess my view would be that, like, it's not clear that OMB ever needs to be involved.
Basically, like, lay off, man. Looney says involving OMB just creates more paperwork and slows things down. Nevertheless, a 2016 report from the Government Accountability Office said the IRS exemption should be reviewed, And now Republican senators are pushing for more OMB oversight. Adam Looney even says when he was at Treasury, the occasional OMB reviews did make regulations better and more effective.
So ultimately, I thought it was like a super helpful element of the process.
Even though you might have not liked filling out the paperwork at the time.
No, we didn't like it.
At the end of the day, he says, it all comes down to a bureaucratic turf war. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailath for Marketplace.
Nobody likes paperwork, man. Wall Street this Tuesday. Stocks had a bit of a rough go. Bonds, we did already talk about details. We'll talk about that when we do the numbers. Andrew Ross Sorkin had an interesting column in the New York Times the other day, a business and economic take, if you will, on how to make mass shootings less likely. PayPal and Square, Sorkin pointed out, decided years ago not to let people use their services to buy guns. What about MasterCard and Visa, Sorkin wondered, or the big banks that issue credit cards? Why can't or won't they do the same thing? Marketplace's Andy Euler went in search of the answer.
We talk a lot about guns and gun control in this country. The firearm and ammunition industry feels like big business. Jürgen Brauer runs a research firm that focuses on the business and economics of firearms. He ran the numbers this week.
The economy at large is about 2,700 times as large as is the firearms industry.
But last year, that was still $50 billion in total economic activity in the U.S. PayPal and Square have decided for moral reasons they're not going to be involved in that part of the economy. Timothy Litton, a law professor at Georgia State University, says that's an individual company's prerogative, but he thinks bigger companies like Visa and MasterCard might have reservations.
I'm unclear why it is that the payment services industry would want to get into this business, because in some ways it's a can of worms.
For instance, if you pull your services from firearms dealers, does the public expect you to do the same with, say, tobacco retailers or sellers of any controversial product? Ben Dwyer, founder and CEO of Cardfellow, a credit card processing consultancy, says it's hard for the credit card companies to boycott guns.
Here's an industry with good cash, good financial incentives, but you know, we don't agree with the politics of it or so forth, so we're not going to do it anymore.
He thinks even the smaller processors would have trouble justifying pulling their services on financial grounds.
Gun sales, when they're done rightfully and lawfully, are good sales. Whether or not that's right or wrong goes beyond the financial aspect of it.
So far, credit companies beyond those with policies already in place have exhibited no plans to implement further restrictions. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
If you're in the market for a new car, sort of on the high end, $35,000 or so, and you don't need it, like, right away, you could do worse than the Tesla Model 3. The catch is, demand for those cars is high, supply is really low. So low, in fact, that Bloomberg's Tom Randall decided to figure out for himself how many Model 3s Tesla is making. Hey, Tom.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why are you going all this effort for the Model 3?
Well, this is Tesla's first attempt to be a high-volume, mass-production automobile manufacturer, you know, like 500,000 cars a year or more. And it's also the first electric car that might possibly reach those kinds of volumes. So, you know, this is probably the most watched number in the automotive industry right now. And stocks are trading on it, people with reservations for their car, they want to know when their number's coming up. And the industry is waiting for bated breath to, you know, see what happens to Tesla.
And your best guess is how many Model 3s are out there running around?
So our best guess as of right now is about 7,700, and they're making about 1,052 a week.
And there are how many people out there waiting for their Model 3?
Well, last we heard, there are almost 500,000. Tesla hasn't been updating those numbers lately, but there are 500,000 people waiting for this car.
How are you tracking production? I thought this was fascinating.
We have two different data sets that we're pulling here, and they're both based on vehicle identification numbers, or VINs. And this was a system that was started in the 1950s, originally to track cars and prevent them from being stolen, but now they're kind of used for recalls. So we are able to electronically ping the U.S. safety regulators to see how many VINs that Tesla has registered at any given time. Now, that's kind of an imperfect number because it's very forward-looking. They register them in large batches before they actually start production on those batches. Then we're also using a data set that's based on crowdsourcing. And we're kind of continuing the data that started with on Reddit and Tesla Motors Club forums where people, whenever they saw one of these Model 3s, they're so rare, whenever they saw one in the wild, people would report them online and take a picture of the VIN, which is in the under the front windshield.
Yeah.
And now people are reporting them directly to Bloomberg.
I have to tell you, my kids and I have a little game, Spot the Tesla 3, and just like 3 days ago, we found the first one.
Yeah, taking the place of the old slug bug VW.
right. Punch buggy, yeah, but that's a whole different game. Here's the thing about Tesla and Elon Musk. He has a history, a protracted, long, drawn-out history of overpromising and under-delivering. And now, in essence, he has bet the company on this car.
That's absolutely right. This is absolutely existential from Tesla's perspective. You know, from the very beginning, Tesla has been built to be a mass market electric vehicle company. And for the last year, they spent almost $4 billion building up the infrastructure for this car to produce them in large numbers. So, you know, when you're seeing these numbers that are so small by comparison, that means a lot of equipment and a lot of people who are sitting kind of idle right now. And that's a lot of cash that Tesla's burning through until they get through the kind of production bottlenecks. So this is one where it's going to start to really, really hurt for Tesla if they can't start to hit those numbers soon.
Have you driven a Model 3, by the way?
I have. Actually, just 2 weeks ago, I spent a whole weekend in a car, about 20 hours. I thought it was a great car. I think the question is whether or not Tesla can make these in sufficient numbers, can make them with sufficient quality, and can turn a profit on it while doing it. I think whether or not people like this car, in my opinion, that's no longer really a question.
Tom Randall at Bloomberg News talking about the Tesla Model 3. Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up.
I like what he's doing. He's got rid of a lot of regulations, and that's helping my business, and I'm very happy about that.
And some other thoughts on President Trump's first year. First, though, let's do the numbers. Well, let's just say it could have been worse, huh? Dow Industrials closed down 254 points, 1%, 24,964. NASDAQ basically flat, 7,234. S&P 500 off 15 points, about a half percent. 27 and 16. The supermarket company Albertsons wants to buy the Rite Aid stores that aren't already being sold to Walgreens. Rite Aid gained 3.2% today. Walgreens basically flat. The drugstore rival CVS off 1.7% today. Speaking of online sales, Walmart reported a sharp decline in e-commerce revenue during the holiday season. The company cited inventory management problems. Shares plummeted 10% on that news. Biggest one-day sell-off in more than 2 years, by the by. Bonds, talked about them a little bit. Prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.88%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ruzdahl. A little bit more than a year and a half from now, July of 2019. About 55,000 Haitians who've been living and working in the United States under what's known as temporary protected status won't be anymore. Originally granted what's called TPS after the 2010 earthquake in Haiti, more than half of the Haitians here now who face deportation are in Florida, working in that state's $100-plus billion hospitality industry. So, Marketplace's Renato Sago has more now on the business economics of ending Haitian TPS.
Wilna Destine is in the employee parking lot of the most magical place on earth, Walt Disney World. It's where hundreds of uniformed workers file in on their way to clean the resort's lavishly themed rooms and to cook meals for guests. Destine greets them twice a week at the parking lot entrance with a clipboard and a question.
Okay. decide this already?
The 41-year-old housekeeper is gathering signatures to raise the wages for more than 70,000 employees. She says it's tough to convince Haitian workers with TPS, like her, to sign the union petition. They're thinking ahead to next year when they'll face deportation.
I know people who want to sell their stuff and go, where are you going? We are the one who cleans, we are the one who cook, we are the one who put food on the table. We all work for this country. We make it great.
Destine says she fled Haiti for Florida on a boat 17 years ago at age 24. She didn't qualify for asylum at the time, so she got her start working off the books in hotels. She finally received temporary protected status in 2008.
There's a lot of opportunities, and I go to work and pay taxes and do whatever I can do and support my family, paying my bills. This is what I do for my life.
Her husband also has the temporary protected status. Her 14-year-old daughter and 7-year-old son were born in Florida. They are U.S. citizens. Destine hasn't returned to Haiti since she left.
I don't want to go and leave my kids because those kids, I give them birth. I'm their mama. I give them love, you know.
The Center for Migration Studies estimates Florida has more than 32,000 Haitians with TPS and that 81% of them are part of the state's workforce. Many work in the hospitality industry.
I mean, it's massive.
Jeff Paquette is a union leader for Unite Here Local 737. It represents hospitality workers, including 400 Disney employees with temporary protected status.
Everyone who's Haitian, they know someone, their neighbor has TPS, their uncle has TPS.
In the past year, the union has been one of the most vocal opponents of the executive order to end TPS. It helped organize a protest in November with hundreds of workers outside President Trump's estate at Mar-a-Lago. Members of Congress have expressed a need for a path to citizenship. In November, the White House extended the TPS deadline to July 2019. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association lobbies on behalf of the state's $111.7 billion hospitality industry. Aaron Hellcamp Powers, the group's press secretary, read a statement in response to questions about TPS.
As this is a developing national issue, it is difficult to determine the precise impacts of the policy at this time.
Disney did not respond to a request for an interview. Union leader Jeff Paquette says he thinks the number of Haitian hospitality workers affected overall, 32,000 out of more than 1 million in the state, may not be enough to hurt a large company like Disney.
It's a massive impact to the community of Haitians, but it is a drop in the bucket to the company.
And he points out the hospitality industry in Florida has a new source of labor, Puerto Ricans who've left the island after Hurricane Maria. In Orlando, I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
We spent a whole lot of time last year in and around Erie, Pennsylvania, trying to figure out what voters who went Obama, Obama-Trump in the last three presidential election cycles were hoping for and how they felt about what they got. Union City, PA, on the rural outskirts of Erie, population about 3,300, was a regular stop. A place called Madonna's Restaurant and a group that's been meeting there for breakfast for a very long time.
I think he's going to do what he said he's going to do, and the man is a workaholic. I think he has our country in his best interests, and I think he's going to do the job.
8 in the morning, there's oatmeal, eggs and toast, coffee, and lots of talk about a lot of things, politics and the economy especially.
I'm Merv Fryer. I'm a retired dairy farmer.
My name is William Mitchell. I'm in the gas and oil business.
I'm Norm Troyer. I'm a local real estate broker.
My name is Robert Blakesley, and I have a lumber company.
Talk to me, sir, about the lumber business.
Business has really come up in the last year tremendously. In the last 10 years, we've only had two good years, but before this last year, and it is looking good, and it looks like it's going to be even better next year.
The folks who work for you, since business is going so well for you, you're going to give them raises?
I already have.
You already have?
Yes.
How much more are they getting?
$20 a thousand. Say they, the company as a whole, they would produce 50,000 feet a week. So $20 a thousand.
Oh, $20 a thousand feet of wood?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it. Huh.
So that's significant.
Mr. Troy, let me ask you something. So I'll tell you what.
every time we come here and we have you on, people write into Marketplace and they say, oh, those Troyers, they own half the damn town out there. They got more money than they know what to do with.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're doing pretty well for this neck of the woods, yeah?
We've done well. We have no complaints about this country. I love this country, and I love the guy that's running the country. I have a few disagreements with him, but I like what he's doing. He's got rid of a lot of regulations, and that's helping my business, and I'm very happy about that.
What about the rest of the country, though, Mr. Troyer? Folks who maybe aren't doing as well as you are?
I don't know. I don't know about that part of the country.
I mean, all you have to do is drive up and down Route 8 and see folks that aren't doing so well.
That's been that way for a long time, and I think it's. It's just getting better, I think. I really do. I think the people are going to be getting an increase in their paychecks here, and they're going to be paying less taxes. I think it's going to be nothing but better.
Mr. Blakesley, you're a small businessman, I guess you'd say, right?
Right.
Do you believe this tax bill was geared for you, or was it geared for the big giant companies out there?
You know, we've seen, for the last administration, the business guy was the evil guy, the greedy evil guy, and it looks to me from what happened that they were basically pressed down so that it was very hard to make money. If the big guy isn't making money, how can he hire? How can he pass it on? Or even the people in this town here, this is sort of a bedroom community. A lot of people work in Erie. You know, GE going basically bad has really hurt this community. So I believe that the big guy has to succeed in order to help us little guys. You know, we can't all work for the government. Someone's got to be making money.
Mr. Mitchell, tell me about the tax law and regulations, right? Oil and gas is a pretty heavily regulated industry.
Yes, it is. And there is a lot of tax breaks for the investor in the gas and oil business, which moves money, puts it into circulation, is what I'm trying to say. And it's like Rob said, Blakesley here, he increased that $20 a thousand, and that's a pretty good increase. It's a very good increase. And it's because of this tax bill that Trump put in. I think I understand what he's talking about. You know, everybody says, well, it's not for the little guy, it's for the big guy. But when the big guy can, you know, get ahead a little bit, he can hire more people.
You believe in trickle-down economics?
Yes, I do.
Norm Trier, let me ask you this. Real estate, right? How's business?
I have a variety. I do brokerage, and that's been holding in there. I also own apartment complexes, and they're 90% occupied. It was 100%, but give winter time to get a little moving in and out.
So you're doing great.
It's okay. We don't get the high-end rental amounts here. And here we're getting killed with real estate tax increases. So that's a huge, those are huge problems.
How are we going to pay for schools and roads and bridges and infrastructure if folks don't want to pay taxes?
There are other ways to raise revenue. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be some real estate taxes, but I'm saying now it's becoming disproportionate. You know, I'm not a kid. I'm still working. I'm 82 years old, sir. Most of the people in other little candied things retired at 60. There's a difference.
Y'all at this table are mostly doing pretty well. You're working, but you're doing all right, right? Anybody going to shake their head? Okay.
Except for one thing. We work our tails off.
I understand that, and that's what I said. Y'all are working, but you're doing all right. I get that.
Then you have someone who isn't working, doesn't want to work, and we're always on the pay end. We're never receiving. What are we receiving? We're always paying out, you know?
Well, so that gets to the question. Y'all seem a little, I don't want to say angry, but irritated. But you got Mr. Trump in the White House doing what you want him to do, yet you're still irritated? Because it hasn't changed enough? Is that where we are?
The man has been in office for 1 year. The economy has rebounded. We've had a lot of improvement. Everybody expects a miracle in 1 year. There have been a lot of regulations that have already been splashed. We get rid of regulations, cut the thing down, cut the cost down, give the man a chance. It's just like we're in the first quarter of a four-quarter ball game. I don't know if you've been watching the football teams, but it's pretty hard to think that you know how the whole game is going to turn out if you're only watching the first quarter.
That right there was Norm Troyer. Also, Merv Troyer, Bill Mitchell, and Robert Blakeslee at Mandana's Restaurant in Union City, PA a couple of weeks ago. Tomorrow, a trip into town, see what the residents of Erie City proper have to say. In the meanwhile, you can catch up to all of our coverage from Erie, the big promise, we call it, at marketplace.org. Final note on the way out today, in which we learn, and not for the first time, that people take their emojis very, very seriously. From the Portland, Maine Press Herald, this item: the new lobster emoji, due officially to be released later this year, has been redesigned. Apparently, the first version only had 8 legs instead of the biologically accurate 10, which is good. Also, does anybody know if there's a melted butter emoji out there? All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials off 254 points today, about 1%. NASDAQ basically flat. S&P 500 off 15, about 0.5%. Our digital team includes Sarah Menendez, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. Ben Hethko does digital video for us. Sarah Muti is our executive director of digital. Star Nieves is our executive director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.